Today, we're going to continue on in this message, series of messages on prophecy. To recap my previous messages, for those that may have not heard all of them, I began with God's promise of a Messiah in the Garden of Eden that was given to Adam and Eve and Satan himself. And how this would actually lead to God's promises to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob of a kingly reign and also great nations. We saw how Judah received the scepter and how the kingly line led from Judah to Jesus being born in the family of King David. We also saw how King David's kingdom continued after the fall of Jerusalem by the Babylonians and how it was moved to Ireland and then to Scotland. And then when King James VI of Scotland became King James I of England, he united Judah's kingship of David to the tribe of Joseph, as Manasseh was still united with Ephraim in England at that time. So we saw how the Israelites migrated to Europe, the European nations, and that the two sons of Joseph received the birthright blessing of Israel. Ephraim became a commonwealth of nations, just as prophesied by Jacob's blessing, and Manasseh became a great nation. Again, the purpose of these messages is to understand which nations are affected by the end-time prophecies in the Bible, because they're only identified as Israel or Jacob's or Isaac, Abraham's seed. The British Empire and the United States of America are the true birthright nations based on historical events that fulfill biblical accounts that we have covered so far in this series of messages. Today, I want to show you some more proof on this statement from the Word of God that these two nations are the descendants of Joseph, and they did receive the birthright blessings. Historical events will point to these two nations of peoples who descended from Joseph, the son of Israel. Title, Birthright Blessings. Birthright Blessings. In Genesis chapter 22, we're going to look at some of the prophetic statements that were made by God to those people that he was working with. Beginning in Genesis chapter 22 and verse 15, then the angel of the Eternal called to Abraham a second time out of heaven and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Eternal, because you have done this thing and have not withheld your son, your only son, blessing I will bless you, and multiplying I will multiply your descendants as the stars of heaven and as the sand which is on the seashore. And your descendants shall possess the gates of their enemies. In your seed, all nations of the earth shall be blessed, because you have obeyed my voice. The blessing is that many people would come from Abraham, and they would possess the gates of their enemies, and other nations would actually be blessed by them. The next inspired message was given by God to the brothers of Rebekah, to say to her as she was departing to go and marry Isaac. This is in Genesis chapter 24. In Genesis chapter 24, beginning in verse 58, then they called Rebekah, and they said to her, will you go with this man? And she said, I will go. So they sent Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant and his men. And they sent them away. And they blessed Rebekah and said to her, "Our sister, may you become the mother of thousands of ten thousands, and may your descendants possess the gates of those who hate them." Again, a blessing of many descendants and the possession of their enemies' gates. The United States of America and the British Empire have many people under them, and they possess the strategic sea gates around the world, just as the scriptures foretold thousands of years ago. Now, the Hebrew word for gate is shear, which means an opening, like a door, a gate, a port, or a city, according to Strong's. In modern terms, these gates were meant to be strategic seaports of entry or waterways, which one can control the passage of others, just as our great sea coast that we have on either side of our shores. Great Britain used to be in control of many of these sea gates. The British Isles and their territories were mostly sea coast nations along large bodies of water. They were islands like Australia, Hong Kong, Singapore, New Zealand, all island nations that they actually controlled at one time. These sea gates gave Great Britain mastery of the seas for more than two centuries. They controlled the Falkland Islands, which enabled the Royal Navy to control the area around Cape Horn, the southern tip of South America. They also controlled a few cities in South Africa, including the Cape of Good Hope around South Africa, and many other strategically located portos that they controlled, these key sea and ocean passages that were around the globe, granting the British people unrivaled dominance of the seas. They have since lost some, like they lost the Suez Canal, but they still possess the Straits of Gibraltar. But the United States also controlled many sea passages as well, like Panama Canal, but we gave control of that away. Joseph's descendants were to be a maritime nations. In other words, having naval powers. It is one of the key reasons that the United States and Britain rose to prominence was their gaining possession of these strategic gateways around the globe, just as mentioned in the prophecies about controlling the gates of your enemies. Another blessing by God is in Genesis chapter 35. In Genesis chapter 35, beginning in verse 10, I'll let you get there. Genesis chapter 35, verse 10. And God said to him, "Your name is Jacob. Your name shall not be called Jacob anymore, but Israel shall be your name." So he called his name Israel. Also God said to him, "I am God Almighty. Be fruitful and multiply. A nation and a company of nations shall proceed from you, and kings shall come from your body." Verse 13, then God went up from him in the place where he talked with him. So Jacob set up a pillar in the place where he talked with him, a pillar of stone. And he poured a drink offering on it and poured oil on it. And Jacob called the name of the place where God spoke with him Bethel, meaning house of God. Here's that pillar of stone, that same one that he slept on when he had the vision of the ladder to heaven, that the angels were going up and down. The same pillar that he continued to have, that kings were coronated on and still coronated on today, as King Charles III was coronated on that stone of Scone, which I've talked about in other messages. But out of this, it says, a nation and a company of nations shall proceed from you, and kings shall come from your body. A nation, the United States of America, and a company of nations, the British Commonwealth, and kings, the Davidic lineage, which I spoke about last time. Now let's turn to Genesis chapter 48 and look at Jacob's blessings on Joseph's sons. Genesis chapter 48, beginning in verse 1. Now it came to pass after these things that Joseph was told, indeed your father is sick. And he took with him his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim. And Jacob was told, look, your son Joseph is coming to you. And Israel strengthened himself and sat up on the bed. Then Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan and blessed me and said to me, behold, I will make you fruitful and multiply you, and I will make you a multitude of people and give this land to your descendants after you as an everlasting possession. And now your two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, are mine. As Reuben and Simeon, they shall be mine. Reuben and Simeon were his first two born. Jacob actually adopted Joseph's two sons as his own children and gave them his name, the name of Jacob, and also the name of Israel, which God gave to him. Verse 17, now when Joseph saw that his father had laid his right hand on the head of Ephraim, it displeased him, so he took hold of his father's hand and removed it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. And Joseph said to his father, not so, my father, for this one is my firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. But his father refused and said, I know, my son, I know. He also shall become a people. And he also shall be great. But truly his younger brother shall be greater than he, and his descendants shall become a multitude of nations. So he blessed them that day, saying, by you Israel will bless, saying, may God make you as Ephraim and as Manasseh. And thus he set Ephraim before Manasseh. And I talked about that before, that he went according to the way God wanted that direction to go. But right here it says that Ephraim will become a multitude of nations. The British Empire, which the sun never set on. And he said that Manasseh would become a great people or a great nation. The United States of America. Now further blessings were bestowed on Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, by Jacob when he blessed all of his other sons. In Genesis chapter 49. Genesis chapter 49, beginning in verse 22. Joseph is a fruitful bough by the well. His branches run over the wall. The archers have bitterly grieved him, shot at him, and hated him. But his bow remained in strength, and the arms of his hands were made strong by the hands of the mighty God of Jacob. From there is the shepherd, the stone of Israel. By the God of your father who will help you, and by the Almighty who will bless you with blessings of heaven above, blessings of the deep that lies beneath, blessings of the breast and of the womb. The blessings of your father have excelled the blessings of my ancestors up to the utmost bound of the everlasting hills. They shall be on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separated from his brothers. This is the blessing. Now, before the Israelites went in to conquer the promised land, Moses gave his own blessing to the tribes, and you know, by the inspiration of God. And the blessing on Joseph is almost pretty much the same. This is in Deuteronomy chapter 33. Again, in Deuteronomy chapter 33, Simeon is the only tribe that didn't get a blessing. But beginning in verse 13 of Deuteronomy chapter 33, it says, "And of Joseph he said, blessed of the Eternal is his land, with the precious things of heaven, with the dew, and with the deep lying beneath, with the precious fruits of the sun, with the precious produce of months, with the best things of the ancient mountains, with the precious things of the everlasting hills, with the precious things of the earth and its fullness, and the favor of him who dwelt in the bush. Let the blessing come upon on the head of Joseph and on the crown of the head of him who was separated from his brothers. His glory is like the firstborn bull, and his horns like the horns of a wild ox. Together with them, he shall push the peoples to the ends of the earth. They are the 10,000s of Ephraim, and they are the thousands of Manasseh." Listen to Moses' blessing here. He says, "Blessed of the Eternal be his land," in verse 13. This referred to material prosperity the infertility that he wished would come upon Joseph, on Joseph's two sons. Now Moses says that this prosperity be blessed with the precious things of heaven, with the dew, and from the deep lying beneath. Now the phrase here, precious things, is translated from the Hebrew word maged, which means the best, the most precious, or the choicest. And it's used five times in verses 13 through 16. God's desire was to send the dew from beneath the ground and the rain from the sky to enable Joseph's crops to grow. Furthermore, Joseph's land was to be blessed with the best things of the ancient mountains and with the choicest things of the everlasting hills. Many scholars, they believe that this description characterizes the land of Joseph's tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh, across the middle of Canaan, based on how the land is described in Deuteronomy chapter 8. In part, it is. But they didn't prosper all that much in the land of Canaan, as they continually turned their backs on God. In Judges, you can see that all these tribes were doing their own thing. Doing their own thing until it got so bad that they cried out to God. And then God would send them a deliverer, a judge, would fix everything, get rid of the enemies, and then they would turn against God again and do their own things. And he would have to do it again and again, and it kept on repeating itself. Read the book of Judges. You'll see that this is constantly happening. Now, the reference to the horns of the wild ox have to do with military action against other nations or peoples that push the peoples all at once to the ends of the sea or the ends of the earth. To add to this picture of strength, Moses said that those are the 10,000s of Ephraim and the thousands of Manasseh. Now, these brothers' nations did have their battles in Canaan, but much of the time they were a conquered people, who were eventually taken into captivity, never to return. Jacob's prophecy in Genesis chapter 48, verse 19, it foresees two major world powers. Two major world powers. One of which is Manasseh, a single great nation, while Ephraim is a multitude of nations. The United States of America is without a doubt the greatest single nation in terms of both wealth and power that the world has ever seen. Similarly, the British Empire, upon which the sun never set, was once, as it was once said, was in its heyday even greater, especially in the terms of its scope and control of the world politically and economically. These brother nations have worked together over the last two centuries to dominate world affairs. Is there any other nations that you can think of that would fit the descriptions that are mentioned in the Bible to show that they're Ephraim and Manasseh? Now, it's easy for me to stand up here and say that these two nations are the fulfillment of ancient prophecies of the Bible, because I can show you different historical facts which only would relate to the United States and Britain, you know, actually meeting these requirements of these said prophecies. But it's not enough for the world to see plainly. I'm not going to be able to convince the rest of the world that this is true. Now, they believe that these prophecies were fulfilled in the nation of ancient Israel. And they are correct in a sense. But one thing that they're lacking understanding is the prophecies of the Bible are dual in nature. There is a former and a future fulfillment. In the case for these two nations, Ephraim and Manasseh, there was a fulfillment in part of the blessing in ancient Israel, but also the cursing. We always forget about the cursing. They continually disobeyed God, who brought them out of Egypt and gave them the land of Canaan. They went into captivity by the Assyrians, and they never returned to the promised land. So we got to ask ourselves, how did they disobey God that so much that he took them out of the land? The same thing happened to the Jews when they were taken captive into Babylon. But one thing is, when the Jews returned from Jerusalem after captivity, they kind of understood what sent them into captivity in the first place and decided to make sure that they didn't make that same mistake again. An interesting read is to read the book of Nehemiah, and you'll see a lot of the different steps that they take to try to not make that mistake again. What's the mistake? Well, we need to look at Ezekiel chapter 20 to find the mistake. If you'll turn to Ezekiel chapter 20. In Ezekiel chapter 20, beginning in verse 13. Yet the house of Israel rebelled against me in the wilderness, and they did not walk in my statutes. They despised my judgments, which if a man does, he shall live by them. And they greatly defiled my Sabbaths. Then I said I would pour out my fury on them in the wilderness and consume them. But I acted for my name's sake, that it should not be profaned before the Gentiles, in whose sight I had brought them out. So I also raised my hand and an oath to them in the wilderness, that I would not bring them into the land which I had given them, flowing with milk and honey, the glory of all the lands, because they despised my judgments and did not walk in my statutes and profane my Sabbaths, for their hearts went after their idols. Nevertheless, my eye spared them from destruction. I did not make an end of them in the wilderness. But I said to their children in the wilderness, do not walk in the statutes of your fathers, nor observe their judgments, nor defile yourself with their idols. I am the Eternal, your God. Walk in my statutes, keep my judgments, and do them. Hallow my Sabbaths, and they will be a sign between me and you, and that you may know that I am the Eternal, your God. We are to keep God's commandments, But God puts a great emphasis on idolatry and Sabbath breaking. These two things he hates greatly. This is the reason they were taken into captivity. The Jews knew this when they came back. They made sure that there was no idol worship, and they made sure they did not break the Sabbath. The only thing is they put too many rules on the Sabbath because they were afraid of breaking it and afraid of going into captivity again. They made it the Sabbath a burden. But they knew what laws that they broke. This is the reason God allowed these nations of Israel and Judah to be conquered and the people to be taken into captivity. Let me show it to you more clearly stated in God's word. Leviticus chapter 26. There's no way you can read this and not understand this. Leviticus chapter 26, beginning in verse 1. You shall not make idols for yourselves. Neither a carved image nor a sacred pillar shall you rear up for yourselves, nor shall you set up an engraved stone in your land to bow down to it. For I am the Eternal, your God. You shall keep my Sabbath and reverence my sanctuary. I am the Eternal. Clear. The emphasis is on not committing idolatry and not breaking his Sabbath. He continues in verse 3. If you walk in my statutes and keep my commandments and perform them, then I will give you rain in its season. The land shall yield its produce, and the trees of your field shall yield its fruit. Now God goes on to tell Moses, to tell the people that they would receive other blessings if they did obey God. However, in verse 14, he says, but if you do not obey me, and do not observe all these commandments, and if you despise my statutes, or if your soul harbors my judgments, so that you do not perform all my commandments, but break my covenant, I also will do this to you. I will even appoint terror over you, wasting disease and fever, which shall consume the eyes and cause sorrow of heart. And you shall sow your seed in vain, for your enemy shall eat it. I will set my face against you, and you shall be defeated by your enemies. Those who hate you shall reign over you, and you shall flee when no one pursues you. Then God says this in verse 18. Pay attention to this. Verse 18. And after all this, if you do not obey me, then I will punish you seven times more for your sins. God goes on to say this three more times, that his punishment would be sevenfold. The Israelites did not heed God's warnings here, or the warnings that he mentioned in Deuteronomy chapter 28, the cursings and the blessings there, and also chapter 30 of Deuteronomy, when Moses explains these blessings and cursings that would come upon them in accordance to their actions in obeying God's laws and keeping the covenant. They disobeyed, and they were conquered, and they were taken into captivity. This was the curse. So did the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh receive the blessings again as a fulfillment of a dual prophecy? This is important. And if so, when? When did they receive this? Now here is more proof of the identity in the nations of the world today of who Ephraim and Manasseh are today. This is the point of this message here, this birthright blessing that was withheld sevenfold because of their sin. God says that he will not forsake his people and that he will remember his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and Joseph. Continuing on in verse 44, it says, "Yet for all that, when they are in the land of their enemies, I will not cast them away, nor shall I abhor them or utterly destroy them and break my covenant with them, for I am the eternal their God. But for their sake, I will remember the covenant of their ancestors, whom I brought out of the land of Egypt in the sight of the nations, that I might be their God. I am the eternal." This is an unconditional covenant that God keeps. He promised Abraham that his descendants would prosper, as described in the blessings that were given by Jacob and Moses, as we have read. God would do this when he decided the time was right to do this, according to their behavior. Israel disobeyed, so the birthright blessings were held back 7 prophetic times. Again, Leviticus chapter 26, verse 18, it says, "If also after these things you do not obey me, then I will punish you 7 times more for your sins." Understand this. The expression 7 times is translated into the English from a Hebrew word which conveys a dual meaning. The original word Moses wrote is Shabbat, and it's defined as 7 times, and it's also is sevenfold. The 7 times implies a duration or continuation of punishment. But the word also conveys the meaning of sevenfold or 7 times greater intensity of punishment, as a punishment that is sevenfold more intense. In this sense, the meaning would also be the same as in Daniel chapter 3, verse 19, where King Nebuchadnezzar, in a rage, commanded that the furnace, which he was going to throw Daniel's 3 friends into, be made 7 times hotter. It's the same concept. Now, scripturally, a time is a year. Thus we find in the book of Daniel, time, times, and half a time. And we understand that to be 3.5 years. That's in Daniel chapter 7, verse 25. So prophetically, a symbolic day equals a year. A year is based on the prophetic year of 12 months with 30 days each, is how the Hebrews kept their calendar. So 12 times 30 is 360. So 7 times would be 7 years times 360 days, which means 2,520 days. Now these 2,520 days would represent 2,520 years of punishment that God would bring upon Israel for their disobedience and for breaking their covenant. Understand this. So when did Israel's punishment begin? Is the big question. When did it begin? Now, the ancient nation of Israel was being attacked by their enemies around 814 BCE in their Gilead territories, and then again in 733 BCE when the king of Assyria actually took away the tribes of Gad, Reuben, and the half-tribe of Manasseh into captivity. But the Assyrians continued to conquer parts of Israel in 722 to 720 BCE. Of course, Judah would not be fully conquered by the Babylonians until about 586 BCE. So when does the 2,520 years begin and end of God's sevenfold punishment against these two birthright nations? Now, if we base it on when Israel was defeated by the Assyrians, since Ephraim and the other half-tribe of Manasseh were captured, and the blessings were to come upon them, and then it would mean that the blessings would be restored around 1800 CE. 1800 CE. In 1800, to give you an idea what was going on in 1800, the United Kingdom and the United States were very small and insignificant among the Earth's nations. The United Kingdom consisted only of the British Isles, a very small part of India, and of Canada, and a couple little islands here and there. So the United States, at that time, they only consisted of the 13 original colonies and three added states. Neither of these nations possessed great wealth or power in 1800 compared to other civilizations or other nations around the world. But beginning in 1800, these two little nations began to sprout and to grow into vast national riches and power such as no people have ever possessed. Soon, Britain's empire spread around the world until the sun never set on her possessions. Canada, Australia, South Africa were given dominion status and made free and independent nations, ruling themselves independent of England, a company or a commonwealth of nations joined together, not by illegal government, but solely by the throne of David. The throne of David. Now, the birthright blessings were finally bestowed. Now, I'm going to read something from the United Church of God's commentary that's edited by Tom Robinson. It says, Britain developed into a world power following the defeat of the Spanish Armada in 1588. And through the 1600s and 1700s, its affluence increased tremendously as it acquired colonial possessions around the world. Yet we should bear in mind that the blessings were to culminate with Manasseh as a great single nation and Ephraim as a company of nations. This necessitated the separating of the brother peoples of Ephraim and Manasseh, which didn't fully transpire until the time of the American Revolutionary War of Independence. And that is very significant. If we start counting the 2,520 years from the initial incursions of the Assyrian Empire into Israel in the mid-740s to early 730s BCE, the count would end around 1776 CE, the signing of the American Declaration of Independence. Or around 1783, the Treaty of Paris, which recognized that independence. If we start counting from Israel's first and greatest deportation by the Assyrians that occurred between 734 and 732 BCE, we arrive around 1787 to 1789. Okay? 1787 to 1789. The United States Constitution was signed in 1787, ratified in 1788, and put into force in 1789. Through all this, the prophesied great single nation of Manasseh was established. We can also start counting from the three-year siege of Israel's capital city of Samaria, which happened between 725 to 722 BCE, the final fall of the Kingdom of Israel when it experienced a second deportation. Counting forward 2,520 years, we come to a time that a global power shift occurred. While Britain was already a major power, it was not the dominant power on Earth. But during this time frame, that would change. When the French Emperor Napoleon attempted to seize Egypt, intending to gain control of the Middle East and to eventually wrest India away from British control, the British Navy stopped him. In 1798, Britain's Admiral Horatio Nelson pursued Napoleon's fleet to Abakor Bay in Egypt and destroyed most of it at the famous Battle of the Nile. Overnight, the Mediterranean became an English seaport. Napoleon's army, although intact, was stranded in Egypt. Bonaparte could not march to India, which was his plan, without the fleet behind him to supply him. He tried to move up through the Levant, which is the country's border in the eastern Mediterranean, but the British naval squadron stopped him at Acre. Thus, unquestioned naval supremacy fell to the British, enabling this modern Ephraim to become the prophesied company of nations scattered across the globe. In close proximity to the conclusion of the 2,520 years from the fall of Samaria, the United States federal offices were moved in 1800 from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, to a new capital city in Washington, D.C. And a couple years later, America made the Louisiana Purchase from a war-wearied and desperate Napoleon, increasing the size of the United States by 140% and adding to it some of the most richest lands on the earth. Napoleon is said to have commented, "This accession of the territory affirms forever the power of the United States." Napoleon himself was soon fell to the British. When you look at the possessions of the United States and the UK at that time, more than half of all tillable, cultivable, temperate zone lands of this earth were in possession of those two great powers alone. The rich agricultural lands of the Mississippi Valley, the vast wheat and grain fields of the northwest of Canada and Australia, the great forest of lands of the Pacific Northwest and many other parts of the world, the gold fields of South Africa, Australia, Alaska, and the United States, the great coal mines of the United States and British Isles, the natural waterfalls and means of power and motivation, and consequent prosperous industrial and manufacturing districts of England and eastern United States, the choicest fruit lands of our Pacific coast and Florida. What other nations combined ever possessed such material wealth? And nearly all this wealth came to us since 1800 CE, after that 2,500 years of the blessing, the birthright blessing being withheld. All of a sudden it just came immediately. The prophecies of Joseph's seed gaining the birthright blessings have been fulfilled only in these two great nations. However, the prophecy of cursing is dual also. These amazing prophecies do not end with the descendants of Abraham retaining possession of the gates of their enemies. Nearly 3,500 years ago, God told Moses to inform the Israelites that if they do not obey his instructions, they would be blessed. But if they disobeyed and they failed to observe his commandments, they would be punished. In Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 1 and 2 and verse 15, read that whole chapter. Another specific prophecy also from that chapter, God stated that the punishment for disobedience of the enemies of Israel would besiege and vex or trouble, oppress all of your gates. These sea gates I talked about that we've lost. That's in Deuteronomy chapter 28, verses 52 and 55. Many prophecies indicate that the Israelite nations will be defeated suddenly and quickly by their enemies and carried into captivity into foreign lands. Again, in Deuteronomy chapter 28, it's also mentioned in Isaiah chapter 29 and 30, Jeremiah 15 and 30. These are all things we're going to be looking at next time. The Bible clearly predicts that the sea gates promised as a blessing to Abraham's descendants would be lost to their enemies when God begins to break the pride of your power as a punishment for their disobedience. That's in Leviticus chapter 26, verse 17 and 18. This process has already begun. This process has already begun. Great Britain isn't so great anymore, as it's lost many of its territories that it once controlled. The United States is in the process of losing its identity as a world power right now. We have lost key gates, and based on the prophecies not yet fulfilled for Israel, we can expect further decline of this once great nation that was blessed by God. The blessings were unconditional. But God still expected us to keep His commandments, to keep His Sabbath, and to refrain from idol worship. We can see this nation falling further away from the biblical principles of this nation that this nation was founded on. I'm going to be continuing this series by looking into the biblical prophecies that will occur to this nation and have already been occurring. As I've been preparing these messages, I feel like I'm running out of time. I turn on the news and prophecies are being fulfilled before our eyes of the downfall of this great country, just as prophesied. I hope I get to the end of this before we're all gone. But that's how much this country is deteriorating because of the cursings that is upon us. This nation will fall, just as the prophecies say. But God will restore His people when Christ returns. He will restore His people. In closing, I want to read what Jeremiah says about God restoring His people. And it's interesting of where he mentions that he's going to be gathering them from. Jeremiah chapter 31, in verse 7, says, "For thus says the Eternal, sing with gladness for Jacob, and shout among the chief of nations. Proclaim, give praise, and say, O Eternal, save your people, the remnant of Israel." Verse 8, "Behold, I will bring them from the north country, and I will gather them from the ends of the earth. Among them, the blind, the lame, the woman with child, the one who labors with child, together. A great throng shall return there. They shall come with them weeping, and with supplications I will lead them. I will cause them to walk by the rivers of water in a straight way, which they shall not stumble. For I am a father to Israel, and Ephraim is my firstborn. Hear the word of the Eternal, O nations, and declare it to the isles afar off, and say, He who scattered Israel will gather him and keep him as a shepherd does his flock. For the Eternal has redeemed Jacob and ransomed him from the hand of the one who is stronger than he." I will continue next time to talk about exact prophecies and show you how they're already being affecting the United States and Great Britain, and the ones that are still going to occur. These prophecies are true. There was a blessing on the nations of Israel before they disobeyed, they were cursed. That blessing was unconditional. It finally came to the United States and Great Britain. And even though it was unconditional, God still expected us to keep His commandments, to keep His Sabbaths, and not to break the commandments by worshiping other idols. And these are things that the United States and Great Britain have done. And so now comes the cursings. And it won't end until those nations are taken into captivity by their enemies, just as ancient Israel was before. More will be coming on this in my next messages.